Family, this is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As Americans pay higher prices at the gas pump, the White House appears worried that the president could pay a price at the polls this November. That's likely why the White House has announced that President Obama will conduct a series of high-profile interviews and appearances talking about his energy policies and dismissing his naysayers, as he did at a community college in Maryland yesterday.
There is no such thing as a quick fix when it comes to high gas prices. There's no silver bullet. Anybody who tells you otherwise isn't really looking for a solution. They're trying to ride the political wave of the moment.
The price per gallon of regular gasoline has risen by about 20 cents just in the past month and shows no sign of slowing down. Some analysts are even predicting we could pay $5 a gallon by summer. The factors pushing those costs upward are many: global uncertainty about Iran and Syria, underproduction in Yemen and South Sudan, a harsh winter in Europe, rising demand in India and China, and the complexities of our own domestic production and supply chain. Today in The Exchange, frustrations over fuel and what, if anything, can be done about it. Let's hear from you too. How are higher pump prices affecting your life? How do you think they'll affect our economy? And perhaps this fall's elections. Also, what do you think the best way out of this situation is? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, theexchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests with me in studio, Professor Masoud Sami, Chair of the International Business Department and Director of the Institute for International Business at Southern New Hampshire University. He's also former Chief Economist for OPEC. And Professor Sami, it's always nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Joining us on the phone from Tampa, Florida is Greg Laskowski, Senior Petroleum Analyst for GasBuddy.com, a group of local websites that offers gas price information to consumers in every metro market in the U.S. and Canada. And Greg, really nice to have you. I'm sure you've been a busy guy lately.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, and just keep us up to date, Greg, if you could. So what's the average U.S. price per gallon for regular gas right now?
We're looking at $3.80 a gallon as the national average. That's up 27 cents over where we were a year ago at this time, and it's actually up 31 cents just in the past month. So it's an aggressive price climb. It's not something that we're terribly surprised by, because we see this every year at this time. But because of the global situation, some of the unrest in the Middle East, that exacerbates what's already a difficult situation.
And can you add on to that, Greg, if you could? We see this every year at this time. Just briefly describe for us these expected fluctuations, and then we'll get into what's happening now.
Sure. Every year in springtime, the refineries go through a process where they have to switch over from producing what's called a winter blend to a summer blend. The purpose of the summer blend is to put into the marketplace a gasoline that burns cleaner in the summer months. So that fuel has additional additives, and it's also more expensive to produce. At this time of year, this is when the refineries start ramping up their production for that summer blend, and it causes some tightness in the market, and it also causes gasoline prices to go up every year pretty much from February through April.
Wow. Okay, so Professor Sami, we sort of expect some of these fluctuations given the season and given what Greg told us. But did you expect that we would see this much fluctuation and prices this high at this point?
Not really. This is a little bit more than I expected. And as Greg mentioned, part of it has to do with increasing crude prices that has gone up because of the market psychology and concern about what's happening in the Persian Gulf and potential disruption of the oil flow from that part of the world. So the crude prices affect the gasoline and home heating price. There is some relationship, but there's time lag between the two. And this is reflecting the crude price increase of last few months.
You know, I'd love to get from both of you your ideas on what's so hard for regular folks who don't study it like you guys do. What's really behind gas prices? And, you know, Professor Sami, there's some things that anyone can understand. The seasonal fluctuations that Greg talked about, for example. But then there seems to be this whole psychological side to gas prices. Fear that the movement of crude may slow down or may be blocked, even if it isn't at this moment. Talk about the psychological side of gas prices.
Right. I mean, as you mentioned, there's two parts that affects the oil price. One is the market fundamentals, supply and demand and so forth. Leaving that to a side, the other one is expectation of what happens to the price as a result of some transitory factors, including political risk. So when the political risk happens and people expect the price to go up, then they would speculate on that. And it's not only on the crude oil in a wet barrel in a market, but also in the futures market, in stock market. And that market is considerably higher, the futures oil price, futures oil market, relative to the spot real crude price. So that speculation also affects the spot price. So if they expect the price to go up, they buy in the futures market, and there's no limit how much we can buy and sell there. And that's what is one of the factors that's changing the market.
So when you
structure.
Say a wet barrel, Professor Sammy, you mean there's two sort of barrels we're talking about here. One is a real live barrel that's wet,
yes.
And the other is this amorphous barrel that will emerge in the future and what our hopes and expectations are for that
barrel.
Right,
in the stock market, pretty much, the New York Exchange.
Can you also jump in on that, Greg, please? Just these intangible, emotional factors behind gas prices.
Well, I certainly agree with the professor. In fact, one of the things that I think was extremely problematic is that if you remember about 6 weeks ago, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta did an interview on 60 Minutes, and he was giving his assessment of what was occurring in the Middle East. And he said he anticipated that Israel would attack Iran, and he put the time frame at April, May, or June. And in the same interview, he quoted an intelligence report in which the question was asked, if such a thing were to occur, if a conflict were to erupt in the Middle East in this time frame, what would that do to oil? And the answer, this came from an unnamed oil expert who I think must have been a civilian, but I don't know. The answer is that it could push crude oil to $200 a barrel. So when you have the Secretary of Defense saying he thinks there's better than a 50-50 chance of this happening, I can't imagine anybody trading oil futures who wouldn't be betting that things will get worse.
Mm.
And this is the perception that that the professor is referring to, I think. It's basically been handicapped by the Secretary of Defense, and who's going to, you know, think otherwise?
Our phone number here in the Exchange for you to join us with your questions or comments about what gas prices have been doing lately, how they're affecting your life, how you think they'll affect the economy and this fall's elections, is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, the Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you go to our page. Join the conversation there. You know, I want to tackle the domestic end of this. We've talked a little bit about the international picture. And Greg, from what I understand, you talked about that $3.80 national average. But there's a lot of variation in that price, right?
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of regional variation. And that has a lot to do with refining capacity, refining bottlenecks in certain areas, and also taxes. We can't ignore the fact that federal, state, and local taxes have a tremendous impact on what's ultimately the price at the pump. And this is one of the reasons why California, New York, Connecticut, for instance, tend to be at the upper end of the price range because they're at the upper end of the tax range.
And the refineries, this is a frustrating issue for us on the East Coast, Professor Sammy, right? I think I read a couple refineries have shut down recently.
Yes, and also I think what is happening is that some of the East Coast gets the crude coming off some areas, not only East Coast, from the Middle East. And so they are much more influenced by the higher prices and so forth as opposed to some of the domestic. So the structure of the refinery, I think, is a very key issue in this process. Yeah.
Why are these refineries shutting down, Professor Sammy? I heard one or two in Pennsylvania, and there's one in St. Croix that shut down.
I don't know about the answer to that. Probably Greg would be a better person to answer that question. But interesting issue is that we're consuming less oil in U.S. than we did previously. And the supply is increasing, but the price is going up. I think that's the really an interesting structure that we have to look at. Why is that happening? And part of it, as we talked about, is the increase in the international price of oil because other places are increasing their demand.
Yeah, and we should talk about the increased demand in developing countries. But to that refinery question first, Greg, because it does affect us here on the East Coast.
Oh, no question about it. In fact, We're talking about three refineries in Pennsylvania. Two of them have already closed. One belongs to Sunoco. Another belongs to ConocoPhillips. And those two have already closed. A third one, which belongs to Sunoco, is in Philadelphia, and that's scheduled to close in July. Now, the three of these collectively represent more than 700,000 barrels per day of capacity. That's a very significant amount, especially in the Northeast, given that the East Coast is not exactly a tremendous hub of refining activity.
Right.
The bulk of the nation's refining activity is in the Gulf of Mexico. So when you have these voids being created, and I can answer your question, why are these places closing? Well, Sunoco says they want to get out of the refining business because they cannot afford the cost of acquisition, and they're referring to the crude oil that the professor just mentioned. That's the reliance, there's a greater dependence on Brent crude oil from Europe and from the Middle East, which trades at a significant premium to the crude oil that's available in other parts of the country. West Texas Intermediate is at about $105 a barrel now, or $106. Brent crude oil is up over $120.
And Brent comes from where? Excuse me for interrupting, Greg.
The North Sea.
Okay, so Europe, basically.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So this is a difficult situation for those refineries, and it's even more difficult not just for Pennsylvania, because a lot of people think, well, you know, maybe this is kind of a local issue. It's an issue that impacts the entire eastern seaboard, because when that void is created, it obviously has to be filled from other areas, and that creates difficulties. They're not insurmountable, but it creates significant difficulties for the pipeline infrastructure. Colonial Pipeline now has to increase its volume from the Gulf of Mexico heading all the way up to the Northeast. There's a lot of logistic situations that are created. But as a result, earlier this year, we saw East Coast gas prices climbing at a rate far more aggressive than any of the states west of the Mississippi. And I think that it's the refinery problem that's the cause of that.
Well, it's interesting. And you're just proving with your statements, Greg, what the New York Times said earlier. Fuel markets are global, but also intensely local. So it's real interesting. We will take your calls after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. We're going to check in now briefly with our March membership drive.
My name is Lynn Krikorian. I'm from Manchester, and I am a sustaining member of NHPR. I feel that Laura Kanoy is a terrific host because she's very balanced. Promote an idea rather than an agenda, I think, is really what I think Laura does so well with allowing her guests to speak on their points of view. There is never a time that I feel like she's swaying one way or another. I feel like she's really trying to bring ideas to the table so that people can form their own opinions. It's wonderful.
And you can join Lynn as a sustainer. You can join all the other members of New Hampshire Public Radio and do your part this morning. 1-888-805-6477 or online nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Rick Ganley. Rick, we're very close to hitting our overall goal for this March fund drive. We're just $154,000 away from our goal. And when we reach that goal, we will receive an additional $20,000 from the Byrne Foundation. This is the big kahuna, so make your gift right now. 1-888-805-6477.
Yeah, this is the big one, Abby, and we know when everyone pulls together, we can reach this goal and we can end this drive. Now, we know why you're listening to The Exchange this morning. It's the same reason that you listen every day for the in-depth conversation, the detailed examination of the issue, but now, there's an added reason because you believe in your community, and New Hampshire Public Radio is a part of that community. And when we all step up and do our part, our community is that much stronger. This is the time for you to step up and support New Hampshire Public Radio. Help us reach the end of this drive. Help us reach this goal. 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477, or go to nhpr.org.
Yeah, do it online, nhpr.org. $154,000 left toward our goal. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but just to set some context for you, last fall we raised $80,000 on just the final Saturday morning in just 5 hours. Just this morning, since we came in at 6 o'clock this morning in 3.5 hours, we've raised almost $10,000. So this is absolutely doable. Don't let that big dollar amount scare you. We can do this. The people who gave a couple days ago and who gave last weekend and who gave the week before, they knew that they weren't going to be the ones to put us over the top. They knew that you were going to come in at the end of the drive and put us over the top. So now it's your time. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
This is the time we want to feel the love from the NHPR listeners. Go ahead and give us a call right now. Get online. Make your pledge that way. This is the time to support New Hampshire Public Radio, just like a lot of these listeners have done this morning. Kimberly from Durham. She made her pledge. She says, I love it. Also, Lynn from Warner, she loves the programming. And also, we heard from several of the listeners, including Wayne in Wolfboro. He says, I love the BBC overnight. I love NHPR. These are people who love New Hampshire Public Radio. You know, that's you. You listen every day. You listen to Laura Kanoi. You listen to Morning Edition. You listen to the Diane Rehm Show. And you love the programming. Well, now's the time for us to kind of feel that love right through the phone line, right through your web browser. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
We have the smartest audience in the world. You're smarter than us. You've been listening all this time. You know that we started out this fun drive with the intention of shortening the drive. But for whatever reason, that just hasn't played out the way that we hoped. And we fell a little bit behind, which is kind of where we are now. But we're not going to let that hold us back, because everyone who gives has the opportunity to help us end this drive this weekend. Rick, we're down to $153,000.
Great news.
To go, that is fabulous news. Your call right now is going to help us be successful and get this additional $20,000 from the Byrne Foundation and end this drive. So help right now, 1-888-805-6477.
We are going to end this drive, and we're going to do it with everybody coming together. Let's hear from you right now, 1-888-805-6477, 1-888-805-6477, or go to the support page at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, hosting Destination College, a college planning convention for high school juniors and parents in March. Information at destinationcollege.org. And from New Hampshire Print and Mail Services, formerly Print Solutions and NH Mailing Services, joining forces to meet your growing need. Information at nhprintmail.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today in The Exchange, fuel prices on the rise. We're looking at the causes and the ripple effects, including in the political arena with elections this fall. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think gas prices are going up so much? What do you think the impact will be on our economy, on our political system? Also, what do you think is the best way out of this situation? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NH. Or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests, Greg Laskowski, Senior Petroleum Analyst for GasBuddy.com. That's a group of local websites that offers gas price information to consumers in every metro market in the U.S. and Canada. With me in studio, Professor Masood Sami, Chairman of the International Business Department at Southern New Hampshire University and a former chief economist for OPEC. And gentlemen, here's an email that came in from Mark, who says, gasoline and other distillates are now this country's number one exports. Mark asks, how can we drill ourselves out of high prices if our own refineries are selling to the highest bidders overseas? This is a great question. Thank you, Mark. Professor Sami, tackle it first.
Yes, and actually the oil market is a global market. So in a sense that if the price are set internationally at the crude price and to some extent on the refined product. So what it means is that if we bring extra amount of crude oil through whatever source may be in the United States, it would be the same as if we bring it in Ghana or some other part of the world. It all goes in the same pot, and pretty much the prices would be global balanced there. Now, obviously, a government can come and say that you cannot export product or you cannot export crude oil.
This oil must stay here for domestic consumers.
Yeah, but that's not our economic philosophy. We're in a free market. So whoever can get a price anywhere in the world, they would export it. And so in a sense, the balancing should be looked at in much more of an international structure as opposed to purely solving the pricing problem domestically.
Well, and this is so interesting. And Greg Leskowski, this is what we hear on the campaign trail. Vote for me, I'll bump up domestic drilling, and that will lower our price. Not true. What do you think?
Well, it's a lot more complicated than people realize. And as Professor Sammy had just stated, last year, it's true, we became a net exporter of petroleum for the first time since 1949. And I think when people hear that information, they're a little bit stunned.
Yes, I am.
And rightfully so, because it's hard to understand when consumption is on the decline in the U.S. for at least the past 10 years. Why are we seeing the price of gasoline edge higher and higher year after year after year? And, you know, we did export quite a bit. It was $88 billion worth of crude oil that was exported out of the U.S. And I think that's one of the reasons why some people may be very skeptical about the Keystone Pipeline, because many people believe that that's simply going to become a channel to get crude oil from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, where it can reach overseas buyers. And that's one of the reasons why, as much as I hate to say this, because I certainly understand, you know, we're a free market economy, it might make sense if Congress and the president eventually approves the last leg of the Keystone Pipeline that goes into Canada. When this approval is discussed next, maybe there should be a discussion of stipulations that could include and I think this would be relatively manageable. If gasoline in the United States is above a certain threshold, then you suspend exports. But as long as gasoline in the U.S. is below a certain price threshold, you can export. Anybody can export whatever amount of oil they want.
So,
there has to be some consumer protection for Americans, you know, built into that Keystone Pipeline.
So right now, you're saying, Greg, the way oil markets work right now, those consumer protections are not built in. It doesn't matter how much we pump in this country. It's still a global market. And pumping the heck out of the United States isn't going to lower the price in the United States?
Not if there's no restriction on exports. Oil companies are free to sell to any buyer that will pay the highest price. There's no restriction that says oil companies have to sell only to Americans or only at a certain price. But when it comes to exports, and this isn't just for the Keystone Pipeline, this could apply to virtually any oil company and any pipeline. But when you're talking about exports, I think rather than infuriate American consumers paying close to $4 a gallon now, why wouldn't it make sense to have some type of a threshold that ties exports to the current price of gasoline in the U.S.
So what's the incentive for oil companies, Professor Sammy, to develop new areas of drilling in this country, if any?
Well, if it's profitable, in other words, cost of the production and development and so forth is below in international prices, still makes sense for them to develop and sell. I mean, in the U.S., the political risk is much less than if you do find oil in some very high risky countries, such as, let's say, Nigeria, for example. So in a sense, they don't have that political risk premium that you have to pay somewhere else. So far as, again, the crude prices globally is above the cost, development and production, then it makes sense for them to have that resources. And particularly if the expectation is that the price is going to go up over the next 5 or 10 years on a trend basis, and that so they can actually produce and make money out of it. There's a profitability there. So why not to develop that? Because it's going to take a few years before the product comes, you know, the output comes into the market.
That's so the frustration. That sense, yeah, you could drill more tomorrow, but it would take a couple of years to get it to market.
A few years. And so therefore, for them, there's a benefit here as well as anywhere else in the world. here they own the reserve. But if you do that, let's say somewhere in Middle East, when the oil is privatized, so they don't own the reserve like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and other countries. So that's the government control. So in that sense, that's the attraction for them.
Our phone number again here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Sammy Greg Laskowski, let's go to the phones. And Will's waiting in Holderness. Hi, Will. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, Laura. Will's phone. Iraqi oil. We went to war in Iraq. There's a lot of oil wells that were blown up. I'm wondering where that oil's going today and what it is for our future. And I'll hang up and let you answer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Will. Professor Sammy, do you know?
Well, actually, we expected that after Iraq situation, the oil prices would go down because the supply would come into the market. But at this point, they are increasing the production. However, again, going back to that, some of the international oil companies are actually buying the oil, and again, the price is international. So supply from Iraq has increased to some extent, but that for a while was compensated for that increase by decline from Libya, from Egypt because of political risk, from Iran to some extent. So now, but at the same time, again, everything goes to a common pool that we have to look at it. But the oil companies that have actually got the contract, some of the European and some U.S., are actually producing oil from Iraq.
And what about tensions in your home country, Professor Sammy? Tensions with Iran are high now. How do those affect oil prices and oil supply?
Well, there's two ways that affects the market. One is in terms of actually market psychology. And that has been probably the most important one, as we talked earlier, in terms of increasing price of oil. In terms of actual supplies, it's affecting Iran a great deal because now they have to barter for some of the oil, find other buyers to buy the oil, which makes it much more complex for them. But if they sell it to some other countries as opposed to more traditional customers, those other crudes become free and they can go to Europe and so forth. So in a sense, if they shift from selling to European to China, for example, then the Chinese have less demand. In terms of supply at this stage, there has not been much of a disruption, as I understand. But in terms of market psychology, that's one of the factors that's driving the crude prices up.
And you mentioned China and Greg Laskowski. We often hear that demand from China and India are driving up the price that we pay in the U.S. Can you untangle that for us, please? And then I have another question along that line.
Yes. Well, certainly any time we hear about demand in developing countries, certainly China, India, Brazil have been huge consumers of diesel and gasoline, and when their demand grows, that pushes up the price of crude oil, and Americans pay more for gasoline. But conversely, we saw earlier this week that after a report that suggested China's economy was slowing down, we saw crude oil prices drop almost $1 a barrel immediately on that news.
Wow. It really does get back to what we talked about earlier, doesn't it, Greg? This whole psychological aspect of oil prices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A great deal of it is driven by perception rather than the reality of things like supply and demand.
Well, and you mentioned Brazil, Greg, and that's a country also, you know, as you said, is growing at a fast clip and using more fuel to fuel that growth. But I thought Brazil was dedicated to using ethanol made from, I think, fast-growing sugarcane. Do I have that right, Greg?
Not exclusively.
Uh-huh.
They still need diesel. You know, so this is a key issue. And you know what's interesting? Even in the United States, where we have the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, believe it or not, we almost had a diesel shortage because those oil fields were going at such an incredible pace that they needed to bring in more diesel to fuel the equipment needed to pump it out.
Wow, right. There's oil that needs to be used to get the oil out of the ground.
Yes.
Thanks for that call, Will. Let's take another one. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Dan's waiting in Nashua. Hi, Dan. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment that what I've noticed, when the stock market is going up, so does the price of oil, and that when the stock market and the economy is doing well, then the oil price, you know, feels that pressure and goes up. Now, I noticed that the Republicans are all saying, oh, we can make the price of gas go down. And I kind of believe them, because if they took $1 trillion out of the national government spending and crashed the economy, that would drive demand down and price of gas would go down too.
Well, thanks for calling, Dan. And Professor Sammy, two points that I want to bring up. His second one, some of the politicians running for president have said, vote for me and I'll make the price of gas go down. Newt Gingrich has said, if you vote for me, I guarantee you gas at $2.50 a gallon, because I will do all the things we talked about earlier, domestic drilling and freeing up, encouraging refineries and so forth. Can a president make oil prices go down?
Well, everything is possible, but at what cost and how quickly?
I mean, it's a global market.
And the question that the caller put forward is a very good one. When we had the economic crash in 2008, the price of oil went down drastically, but partly because of economic situation, not only for that, but that was part of it. So the question is, yes, it's possible, but the cost and let's say if we bring economic recession's possibility, there's a possibility if the Europe goes to the economic recession, they'd use less oil. But I don't think that's possible. You know, in other words, I don't think it's realistic to talk about $2 gasoline prices. Again, there's really much less bottleneck at this point in the short run that could actually affect the price of oil that can be reduced very quickly. That would change the picture.
Greg, real quick to you too, and we've talked about this somewhat, but what about political promises? Vote for me and I'll make gas prices go down.
You know, it's something that's, I think, irresistible for anybody running for office. But, you know, it's important, I think, to also remember that what President Obama is saying now is not exactly what candidate Obama said 4 years ago when he was tempted to make promises to reduce the price of gasoline. And again, as Professor Sammy pointed out, you can always lower the price of gasoline, but at what cost? And we saw gasoline peak in 2008, a year that was very similar to 2012. It peaked at $4.12 a gallon. Crude oil hit $147 a barrel. And believe it or not, Laura, the average price of gasoline just 6 months later, on the last day of the year, December 31st, 2008, was $1.61 a gallon.
Mm.
That's because
wow.
of the economy had plummeted so rapidly, and crude oil went from $147 to about $35 a barrel. You know, so you do have to ask what cost. But getting back to the president, in 2008, just a month before prices hit the peak, both he and Senator McCain agreed that one of the ways to reduce gasoline prices is to get rid of the excess speculation in crude oil. And he said, and here's a direct quote, "My plan fully closes the Enron loophole and restores common sense regulation as part of my broader plan to ease the burden for struggling families today." So both he and Senator McCain said they would close the Enron loophole. That's something, by the way, which allows offshore oil trades to be exempt from U.S. regulation. If you get that loophole closed, you can significantly reduce the amount of price manipulation that's done purely for speculation purposes, and it's not done by people interested in taking delivery, physical delivery of crude oil.
So has it been closed?
No. No, it hasn't.
Professor Sammy, I can tell you want to jump in. We're going to hold it off after a very short break. We'll take more of your calls, too, so thanks for that one. Let's check in super quick with our March membership drive.
My name is Priscilla Malcolm, and I'm a volunteer here at NHPR. How many years have I been a member of NHPR? Probably two or three. I can't say that I have a long record, so I have a lot to make up for. I have to tell you that after I made my first donation, the outstanding feeling was one of relief, as thank goodness I've finally gotten around to doing this. I've listened to this radio station for I don't know how many years, and I've never given a dime, and now I have finally put my money where my mouth is.
And you can as well. Be like Priscilla. Give us a call right now. Maybe you're a longtime listener, and now is the time to alleviate that guilt. 1-888-805 6477. That's the number to call. Good morning. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Abby Goldstein. We want you to become a member of NHPR right now and help us end this March fund drive. 1-888-805-6477 or NHPR.org. And when we do raise our full amount, the $450,000 that this fund drive is for, we'll receive $20,000 from the Byrne Foundation. And the drive will end, Abby. We can do this. We have just $150,000 more to go. 1-888-805-6477.
Online at NHPR.org. So we're down to $150,000 left to raise to hit our goal for this fund drive and receive that additional $20,000. This is tremendous progress. We've raised $12,000 in the last hour and 40 minutes, which means you're hearing it. It's sinking in. End of the drive is near. And this challenge is a huge motivator. I know there's some cynicism around challenges. People think we're going to get the money anyway, but it's just not true. The folks who offer these challenges, like the Byrne Foundation and the other people before them, do so because they want to see us build a stronger base of support. They want their gift to be just one part of the funding solution. They value NHPR's role and mission as a convener of people in the state, and they want to see others join them in supporting this station. This $20,000 will go directly into our operating budget and will go to pay for the exchange and the programs you love, but not until we hit our goal. There is an intention behind this challenge, and that is to inspire you to do your part. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Abby, you know it would be a lot less expensive if we didn't create local programs like The Exchange. You know, we could drop a program in from other national producers into that slot and probably cost a lot less. But the decision that we made to put The Exchange on the air more than 15 years ago wasn't just about expense. It was because we wanted to create a program that would provide a service to New Hampshire listeners. This is New Hampshire Public Radio, after all. So, you know, instead of putting a national program in, we knew the importance of The Exchange to New Hampshire, and other listeners felt how important that was as well, and they've supported The Exchange for all of these years. Now we're asking for you to step up and do your part. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. Great radio programming does cost, and that's why we're asking you to step up and do your part now to support it. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Rick, there's been a big jump in the tally. $148,000 left to raise. You've gotten
fantastic
a lot of
news.
Gifts online. This is fabulous news. Make your gift right now and join the others before you. 1-888-805-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Waste Management producing enough energy to power more than 1 million homes every year by 2020. They expect to double that output. Learn more at thinkgreen.com. And from the Telegraph, innovative local news coverage and advertising opportunities for today's complexities online at nashuatelegraph.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, gas prices are climbing, and we're talking about what's contributing to these increases and how they're playing out in this election season. Join us with your comments and questions at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Sammy, just before the break, Greg Leskoski with GasBuddy.com was talking about the proposal to close what's called the Enron loophole, which deals with oil price speculation. Greg said that loophole has not been closed. Professor Sammy, what's your take on this and why this is important when we talk about gas prices?
Well, actually, I think they are taking some measures to deal with the issue of speculation.
They meaning the Obama administration?
Meaning Obama administration. Perhaps last night's discussion between President Obama and Prime Minister of Britain was a good example. They decided to coordinate use of SPR if the price
spiked. Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
SPR, Strategic Petroleum Reserve, correct, absolutely. So if the price spike, they're going to draw on that if it happens for political reason. Now, there is going to be a philosophical debate whether SPR, Strategic Petroleum Reserve, should be used for price spikes or should be used for major disruption of crude oil. And that was the whole purpose, was major disruption. Disruption hasn't happened. But that discussion between President Obama and Prime Minister, that they're going to rely on the use of Strategic Petroleum Reserve if there's a spike in prices or disruption, can actually prevent speculators to go and expect that the price is going to go up continuously. Now, later on, Japan jumped into this whole picture, and they said, well, we're going to be joining that whole process. So there's going to be a coordinated international effort if we see political factor leading to the price spike, as we discussed earlier. So there is some measures being taken, but not systemic approach.
It calms things down anyway, even if they don't tap into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Professor Sammy. Just knowing that the possibilities out there calms down the speculation, calms down the price?
Hopefully, to some extent. Now, having said that, previous time when they draw on SPR, current administration, Obama administration, wasn't very successful because the amount was small, wasn't coordinated internationally. So hopefully this international coordination would change the picture.
Here's a couple emails that have come in that I want to share with you, gentlemen. And Greg, I'm going to throw this one to you. This is from Suzanne in White River Junction, Vermont. She says, I think the oil companies have us over a barrel, especially since they almost pay no taxes on their profits. Suzanne says, I'm against Keystone XL and against building more wells and for solar, conservation, carpooling, and thinking before getting into the car. Suzanne says, during World War II, there were posters everywhere telling people to question if they really needed to take that extra trip. She says, I can't wait for the new Tesla car to come out. We should be fueling innovation like that instead of bailing out greedy bankers and subsidizing oil companies. What do you think about Suzanne's email, Greg? You know, let's stop fussing about oil prices and really look at innovation to get us off oil, or at least greatly reducing our consumption.
Well, certainly, you know, that philosophically, I can't dispute that. It makes sense to look at all kinds of energy alternatives. And I like the point that she made that talked about driver behavior, because we can obsess about gasoline prices as much as we want, but really it's beyond our control. The only thing we can control, of course, is our own consumption, and the way we drive has a lot to do with it. You know, so that there's a lot of sense to that. But at the same time, I also have to say that we are a petroleum-based economy. And if you think about it, a lot of people don't understand the size of the United States and what it means to the infrastructure to actually have anything ready to bring us into some alternative energy source. You have to have infrastructure in place first. Even the discussions on compressed natural gas right now, and more vehicles are being powered by compressed natural gas. The actual infrastructure needed to assist that is in its infancy, and this is something that we have to build over time. But it's no matter what those efforts might be, it's not going to be a conversion that's going to happen quickly.
You know what's so interesting, too, is her first point, Professor Sammy. She says oil companies pay almost no taxes on their profits, and then she ends by saying we shouldn't be subsidizing oil companies. This is often said about the oil companies. Is that true? They don't pay profits and they're massively subsidized?
Well, there was at one point, I think it was around 1970s, the question was that crude oil reserve should be treated as equipment in the sense that they can get depreciated. So they get depreciation tax, as I understand it. So that is, in a sense, is supposed to be the subsidies that is going to them. And the idea was that if they get more money, there would be more exploration and development. So that's the part. Can I go back to Suzanne's question?
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's a very interesting one. I mean, I would applaud her view.
Let's look at alternative lifestyles.
We're hoping
instead
that
of gas prices.
Everybody thought like her around the world. That would be a great idea. However, people don't think that way, not too many people, and that becomes a more of a personal attitude toward the whole thing. But I think one other point we can add into that is that if we can develop technologies that save energy and can globalize that technology, there's a great opportunity there that can give us a leadership internationally as how to bring down the use of oil and energy and bring substitute products. So that becomes a really a opportunity for us to help our export and cut down our, on the world use of consumption of oil. But that would be probably technology would be also an addition that can go into that whole email conversation.
Well, Suzanne, thanks a lot for the email. And to you also, Greg, what about subsidies to oil companies? People hear that and they get very upset. They think, look, why are we subsidizing these companies when they're making lots of money? They don't need those subsidies.
Well, you know, the term subsidy is a very, it's a politically charged term. And I can't say definitively that we're actually subsidizing oil companies. Every industry does give tax breaks to encourage development. And the cost of doing business in the oil industry requires billions of dollars for exploration as well as extraction of whatever crude is discovered. But on top of that, you know, there are other issues. There's a tremendous amount of regulation that restricts or almost precludes the U.S. from accessing oil within its own territory. So much so, and here's one of the absurd situations. Cuba actually is going after oil that is closer to the United States than it is to Cuba. But because of our own regulations, we preclude ourselves from pursuing that.
So there are a lot of restrictions and regulations that prevent more domestic drilling. Is that what you're saying, Greg?
Absolutely. And there's also more regulations that inhibit refining. The California, for instance, used to be a major location not only for oil exploration but also for oil refining. And there, California is rapidly losing its refining capacity, and it's one of the reasons why gasoline is about $4.45 a gallon in Santa Barbara.
You know, President Obama's been kind of on the offensive about this, Greg, or I should say on the defensive. Republicans have said, look, you know, if we did more drilling, we could help lower the price. President Obama said yesterday, under my administration, we've done more drilling domestically than we have in many years, saying, I guess we could do it on the National Mall or at your house, kind of making fun of that. But it sounds like you're saying, Greg, these Republican candidates have a point that there are more valuable deposits of petroleum that we're not getting at.
Yes, and frankly, I know that much of this is rhetoric, but the Department of Energy data would dispute the president's claims about what we're actually accessing. If you take a look at just the DOE data, you'll see that it has been in decline for at least the last 4 years.
But as you gentlemen have both talked about this hour, and correct me if I'm wrong, Greg and Professor Sammy, Greg, you first. Even if more of those sources were tapped into, how much would it really lower the price given the global nature of oil markets?
In the near term, that's almost impossible to say. But I think that a multi-pronged effort, and maybe this is one of the things that I haven't heard what Newt Gingrich plans to do to get those gas prices to $2.50. I'd be very curious to hear what it might be. But one of the things would be having greater access to the available natural resources. Secondly, it would be reducing regulations that prohibit refineries from operating in some areas. And thirdly, you know, doing things that can mute the speculation in crude oil globally. All of those things together can indeed bring gasoline prices down significantly. I can't say how far, but I have to believe that all of those three things working together would certainly bring U.S. gasoline prices lower.
And the debate on the other side, Professor Sammy, is there are costs to that expanded drilling.
Absolutely. I guess I put a footnote into that discussion is that we have to be concerned with the environment. At what point are we going to go through that? So the environmental issues are key factors. Obviously, if there's the cost, environmental cost and social cost of some of those are too high, then we have to be concerned with that. So it's a question of a balancing supply and price versus social cost and impact on the environment.
And last quick question for you, Greg Leskowski. Again, your website, GasBuddy.com, tracks gas prices. Some say $5 a gallon sometime this year. What do you think?
In some cities, I think it's foreseeable. Perhaps New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, they may see or $5 or awfully close to it. But I think most metro markets in the U.S. will probably be between $4.50 and $4.75 when prices peak.
Okay. Well, Greg Leskowski, great to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Greg Leskowski, Senior Petroleum Analyst for GasBuddy.com. Professor Sammy, good to see you. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Masood Sammy, he's with Southern New Hampshire University. This is The Exchange on NHPR. We're checking in now with how our March membership drive is going.
Thank you, Laura. Really interesting conversation on gas prices today. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Rick Ganley, and we are in what we hope are the waning days of the March Fund Drive. When we hit our final goal, and we're just $148,000 away from that final goal, we will receive an additional $20,000 from the Byrne Foundation, and this drive will end. So make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Here's a fact, Abby, I think a lot of listeners really aren't aware of, that 90% of the funding for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from New Hampshire. This is not something that comes from the federal government. A lot of people think that. 90% of our funding comes from here in New Hampshire, whether it's New Hampshire businesses, foundations here in New Hampshire, and of course, most importantly, listeners. That's how New Hampshire Public Radio operates, 90% of it. So give us a call right now. Make your voice heard for New Hampshire Public Radio. This is the time to do it in the waning hours of our fund drive. We need to hear from everyone right now to make the end of the drive a reality. 1-888-805-6477, 1-888-805-6477, or make a pledge at nhpr.org.
And, you know, I'm going to level with you right now. We know you probably don't love the fund drive, although we did get a call yesterday, Rick, from a listener who said she really enjoyed hearing all the behind-the-scenes information. And as much as we like being able to talk to you directly about what we do and how we do it, we've got other work we could be doing. But here's the thing. We know there are 172,000 people who tune into NHPR every week. And this is, quite frankly, the most efficient way we have to reach you. In fact, New Hampshire Public Radio won a national award last year for our fundraising efficiency. Now, if we knew your address, we would send you a letter in the mail and ask for your support. If we had your email address, we would send you an email. But you don't have to register to listen.